Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen, and today I am joined by two very special guests, very great guests. One man who believes that he should be the next big thing on ESPN, and that is Usaid Koshal, a man just overflowing with confidence tonight before the show, urging us to just get on with it. And on the other side of the rink today, from Wisconsin, weighing in at 195 pounds at 6'0", the Oak Field High School JV women's volleyball coach, Brian Willis. This show's just going to be electric, guys. How you doing today, Brian?
Good. How are you? Doing well.
I'm living my life, bro. Just the way it should be. Usaid, what's up, man?
Everything's going good. You know, you got me cracking up with the intro, dude. I mean, I'm so like I said, dude, my first ever appearance on your podcast. I love talking football, you know. That's why I'm so, like, excited to get this thing underway, dude.
Yeah, for sure, bro. Like, it's been a blast this whole time, and it's a journey, you know, but We're just rolling through. I am so lost in this introduction that it's not even funny at this point. So let's get to some freaking news, bro, because we actually have a lot of news to get to today. Starting with Corey Coleman, traded to Buffalo. I honestly, Brian and I have this great app, and I can't, we're not sponsored by them, but we should be. So free plug to Sleeperbot, which is actually legit the best, like, news source you can get, because it just streamlines all of Schefter and Rappaport's tweets into, like, an app about news, which is dope. But Corey Coleman got traded. I'm for a late round pick, I want to say. Usaid, my man, you probably know the details of that. Do you want to fill the people in a little bit more about what went down, my man?
So, yeah, Corey Coleman was a 2016 first-round pick of the Cleveland Browns. He's been injured so much. You know, I saw something on Twitter today from Ian Rappaport saying that the Browns are going to be getting $3.5 million back, and they're going to insert that stuff into, you know, into more, it's going to, that $3.5 million is going to be more cap space. So, you know, it's surprising to see that the Browns decided to move on from Coleman. You know, because he was a player from the previous regime, but he was a young guy. You know, he was only 24 years old. But his biggest thing was that he never, you know, could stay healthy. I mean, in three seasons, basically, he's only got 5 receiving touchdowns. Not exactly the first round, you know, numbers that you'd expect to see from a first round wide receiver.
Brian, what do you think about this Coleman trade for Buffalo?
I think it's a good trade. It adds depth to an unproven wide receiver, although he showed flashes. You need to expand more on that. All they have is McCoy. LeSean McCoy, that's it. You need wide receivers there. I mean, Calvin Benjamin isn't getting much.
Yeah, no, Benjamin definitely doesn't get much pop or much, like, respect.
He shouldn't.
Yeah, he hasn't really panned out at all, and you're right, McCoy is not, he's questionable still. It's really surprising to me that we haven't heard more on that situation, but I feel like a suspension is coming at some point, and you add some depth, like, Corey Coleman, for me, I know that I try to, like, stay away from talking about fantasy football in this podcast, but, like, also, all of a sudden, like, Corey Coleman became, like, a really valuable fantasy pickup, because I feel like he's going to get a lot of targets in Buffalo. Am I wrong about that, Usaid?
I mean, it's questionable, you know. I mean, first things first, the guy's got to stay healthy, you know, because I think he's broken his hand, like, twice or whatever, you know. And now, look, they're, you know, he's going to Buffalo, and the thing with the Bills is they've got a defensive-minded head coach, you know. You don't know who's going to be starting there as quarterback, because they've got Nathan Peterman, A.J. McCarron, and Josh Allen, and all three of them have basically a combined 5 starts between them. So you're right, Eric. You know, Corey Coleman, he could be a big boom and hell of a lot of targets and all of a sudden, you know, end up being their number one receiver, or because of the quarterback situation, just be a complete bust.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting thing to watch there in Buffalo for sure. Moving on to our next topic of news, and this is one that Brian had a really good take on. Go check out a piece I just tweeted out. It's my projected rookie quarterback starts piece. And I kind of put some updates to it. A big update was on Josh Rosen. I think he's going to get a lot more starts now. And Brian really convinced me why. Brian, why don't you break this next piece of news and tell the audience why you think Rosen's going to have more starts than I originally had, which was 8. Now I've moved it up to about 12.
Oh, no, because Sam Bradford's probably going to die. Without that lockdown stud at center to protect a quarterback whose bones are made of glass, Sam Bradford, I'll give him till halftime week one.
Damn, bro, that's like that's really harsh. Brian's referring to AQ Shipley, who is out. Bro, he tore both his ACLs. Like, that's insane. Like, I don't know, man. What do you think about the injury, Usaid? And I'll give you an over-under. Over-under how many weeks till Sam Bradford gets injured. I'll put it at 4.5.
You know, I originally had, you know, Sam Bradford playing like 6 or 7 games this year. So I guess we're both in the same ballpark of how many games you expect Rosen to start. I definitely do expect to see Rosen a lot during the second half of the season. Because I know the Cardinals, odds are, they're not going to the playoffs this year. Regarding the ACL injuries, you know, I think this is the 12th player we've seen that preseason hasn't even, like, fully started yet that's gone down with an ACL injury. And for Shipley, that's just a big blow to the Cardinals because this is a team that's somewhat rebuilding, somewhat retooling. But he's, like, a veteran presence in that locker room, you know. And for the younger guys there, he'd really be a leader. And now to see him out, it's going to be tough because, you know, you don't know how Sam Bradford is going to hold up. And obviously you want Josh Rosen to do his best, but you can't have Rosen running around with defensive linemen just like after him, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I see the Cardinals. I was pretty optimistic about them earlier in the offseason. I thought they might be a 7-win team, maybe even surprise some people, win 9. But honestly, like, especially with the offensive line the way it is now, I got them pegged, like, right now around, like, 3 to 4 wins. Where you got them at, Brian?
Yeah, I think 3 to 4 wins is accurate. Now, they've become the armpit of that division. That's all that the other teams did in that division where they got so much better now. And without an all-pro center to protect a fragile quarterback, it's going to be tough. I would say 5 wins is the ceiling.
Wow, I think that's a little bit of a bold take. I feel like you're underselling the roster a little bit. I think the defense is really underrated. What do you think, Usaid?
You know, I think they're going to win, I think, 5 to 7 games this year. I'm going to agree with Brian on that. I mean, you know, Steve Keim and Michael Bidwell, the GM and owner, they've always found a way to put a respectable product on the field. You saw, even when Bruce Arians was there, that they always had something. You know, they're always a team worth watching because they competed. But, you know, now you look at it, you said the defense was a little bit underrated. Yes, that's true, but they're going through a personnel change. And so all of a sudden, you don't know, like, hey, you know, Patrick Peterson's still there, but how's someone like Marcus Golden, you know, going to perform? Because I think Golden's a 3-4 linebacker, and I believe they're switching to a 4-3.
I mean, that's a really good point. I don't know. I could see this team, like, I think they're going to be bad, but I also think they're going to be really fun to watch, if that makes sense. I think every game this team is in this year is going to be really competitive, just because I think Josh Rosen is going to be a stud. But I'm really interested to see how the Cardinals season plays out. Sticking in that division, Aaron Donald. he's in the midst of his huge contract holdout, Usaid, and I just kind of want your thoughts on it. Like, when do you think he's going to be back? Do you think this will last into the season? And how long do you think he's going to hold out? Usaid? Brian?
Yeah?
How long do you think that Aaron Donald will be holding out for?
I think this does last into the season. He seems more intent than other players are when it comes to holding out. Similar to Joey Bosa, when Bosa held out, there was almost no dialogue there between the player and the team. Guys like Julio Jones and Lev Bell actually have dialogue, and it's public. Aaron Donald, Joey Bosa, there was like almost nothing you heard about, and it seems like that's how it's going.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that Donald's a guy that you can point to and say, hey, like, this might not work out as well as we think it would. Let's talk about Aaron Donald a little bit more. Usaid, what do you think about the holdout?
Okay, so Donald did the same thing last year where he kind of held out but then did show up the regular season. You know, and now you look at it as things are getting way more serious. I mean, this could drag on into the regular season, and it's going to end up changing his free agency status. And I think if you're Donald, you know, you sort of have to sit there and say, hey, listen, I'm the best defensive tackle in the game, and I deserve, you know, number one, or, you know, more money than any other defensive tackle. Obviously, you don't want to pay this guy like crazy money, but you're going to have to cough up the money for him, because he's literally, you know, he's literally the face of the Rams defense, you know, and he's the glue that holds them together. And I think that at some point, Wes Snead, GM of the Rams, is going to have to cough that money up and give Donald what he deserves. Otherwise, it's going to be, you know, the Rams, they're going to go into the 2019 offseason and franchise tag Donald. He's in a free agency, but it's going to get way too expensive in 2020. So Snead's got to take a long-term approach here, look at the bigger picture and say, okay, I keep him for 1 year, you know, or otherwise 2020 he bounces.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with that. I don't know. I think that Snead is actually okay with the fact that he's got some okay depth, because I think Michael Brockers is better than people give him credit for. And he's got Sue under contract. And if Donald walks, he could get Sue for cheaper. And honestly, I think Sue's kind of underrated. So I think Snead's actually playing his cards well here. Like, obviously, Aaron Donald deserves to be paid, but, like, he's asking for an insane amount of money, I think. To be the highest paid player in the NFL as a defensive tackle, like, I get it, he's important to that defense, but you can live without a great defensive tackle. You can't live without a quarterback, which is what they're gonna have to pay Jared Goff a lot of money in, like, about a year, especially if he does what he did last year this year. So, I mean, I don't know. I kind of like the way that Les Snead is playing this. And honestly, I don't think the Rams are that worried about Donald leaving. And even if he does, I feel like they have enough in place where they can still succeed.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely interesting to see that, because they got so much star talent on that team. Now, like, they got Ndamukong Suh for a one-year $14 million deal, and then they got LaMarcus Joyner, Aqib Talib, you know, they just handed, and they just locked up Todd Gurley and Brandon Cooks. And so now I think it's all about priorities. Do you go with, you know, paying Aaron Donald, or do you go with paying Jared Goff? And that's going to be a big decision that we're going to have to see sometime within the next year and a half. And, you know, if, like you said, I agree with you on that, Eric, of you don't need, like, a star defensive tackle to compete in the NFL. Because the thing is, if you look at guys like Eddie Goldman and Mike Daniels, you know, both guys who are really solid contributors to both their teams. And, you know, they're obviously not going to get the money that Donald's going to get, you know, but you can still see them when they're playing making a difference.
Yeah, definitely. Brian, tell me, I guess, what do you think would be a fair contract for Aaron Donald? Brian?
I don't know. I'm not even sure what the current top
Yeah, it's complicated.
But I do think that what Let's Need is doing is partially to bolster the defense, but also to not have to worry about something like this. You added talent to the rest of the defense, so you could afford a guy like this to maybe walk from that defense. Although he added talent, but it is aging talent, which makes me kind of nervous for the Rams, because you could be without a younger stud like Donald and then be stuck with Sue and Tlaib past their prime.
Yeah, I agree. I disagree with the fact that you said that Aqib Tlaib is past his prime, because he's not.
Beyond Aaron Donald being with the Rams.
Yeah, I mean,
Aaron Donald, when you still have Tlaib and Sue, 2 or 3 years from now, let's say, just for example, they would be beyond their prime.
Yeah, I mean, you've got some okay points. All right, let's talk about this. Football is back for like a full week this week, starting on Thursday. Preseason games are here. I get it. Preseason is not exciting. No one likes it. Guess what? I don't care. I love the preseason. It's my favorite time of year because I get to see guys I wouldn't normally get to see play. So I'm going to start here, and I'm going to give you my favorite game from this week one of the preseason, and that's got to be the Browns and the Giants. Like, I cannot wait to watch that game. One, you get to see Saquon Barkley play. That's going to be awesome. You get to see how Will Hernandez protects. You get your first look at that Giants offensive line. I don't think you can evaluate much in the preseason, but I think the one thing you can evaluate is defensive pass rush talent, offensive line talent, and running back talent. And this game is going to be packed full of intrigue on both sides of the ball because of that, because also the Browns lost Joe Thomas last year. They got new guys coming in on the offensive line, and they've got a really interesting battle at running back right now between Duke Johnson, Carlos Hyde, and Nick Chubb. And I really want to see how Nick Chubb plays for the Browns in this week one. I'm not sure if he's going to play or not, because I've heard some reports out of Browns camp that he picked up a little bit of a knock in camp. But I think that this game's going to be really interesting. Of course, you can't judge a whole lot off of it, but I'm also excited to see Baker Mayfield in a Browns uniform. I think that's going to be really exciting to watch. So I'll throw it to you, Brian. What's your most exciting game of week one of a preseason?
Well, honestly, I'd have to agree with you, Browns-Giants, but for the sake of being different, another great preseason game would probably be Bears-Bengals. I'm really excited to see what Matt Nagy can do as a head coach, especially with a lot of new weapons at his disposal, going from Alex Smith, Travis Kelce, and Tyreek Hill, and Kareem Hunt in Kansas City, to young Mitch Trubisky, Trey Burton, who I think is really underrated as a tight end, Jordan Hubbard and Tariq Cohen, and then getting Allen Robinson to play with too. I mean, that's to come into that offense has got to be exciting and fun for Matt Nagy.
Yeah, for sure. What do you think, Usaid?
So, yeah, my favorite preseason game that I'm really looking forward to watching in week one is the Packers and the Titans, and the reason being is this: is because as soon as Aaron Rodgers went down last season, all right, the NFL literally like felt like part of the NFL like didn't exist anymore, you know. And then you look at the other, so Aaron Rodgers is coming back, and I like, you know, I'm interested in watching the Packers this year because reports out of training camp are that the defense is looking way better, you know, is really challenging the offense. And then the Packers, they basically got a new look receiving core. You know, Jordy Nelson's not there anymore. And then you add guys like Jimmy Graham, Mercedes Lewis, and they've already got Lance Kendricks. And then the whole concept of committee running back approach that they're taking. And then you look at the other side, the Titans. They got Mike Vrabel, who was a really surprising hire as head coach, because he went from linebackers coach to head coach. You know, you don't see that very often. And then I'm excited to see what Marcus Mariota and Derrick Henry can do, because you have Matt LaFleur now as the new offensive coordinator. And LaFleur is the same guy who helped Jared Goff and Todd Gurley have monster seasons in 2017.
Yeah, that's an interesting preseason game to watch as well. I want to throw out my team, the Broncos. You guys don't have to do a second one, but I am really excited to watch this first Broncos preseason game, just because I think it's going to be so much fun to watch. The report out of training camp is that this is like the best Broncos rookie class we've ever seen. For some reason, everyone loves Cortland Sutton. They think he's going to be an immediate game changer. I'm really excited to see him play. I don't like the fact that my guy Devontae Booker isn't going to really have a shot for the starting running back job, but it sounds like everyone really loves Royce Freeman, so I'm excited to see if he lives up to the hype. And then it'll be interesting to see how Case Keenum plays, because I feel like if he is actually going to be what he was last year, he'll perform really well in the preseason. So I think it's really, and not to mention the fifth overall pick, Bradley Chubb, I'm excited to see how they incorporate him into the defense. So that was the Broncos game this week, which I guess that'll be my team that I'm excited to watch in the preseason. I wanted to throw this to you guys, and I'll start with you, Brian. What team are you most excited to watch in the preseason?
Sure. Well, real quickly, I'll add another team to the preseason game. Thursday, August 9th, we might get to see Andrew Luck throw a football in a football game.
Ooh.
Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Can you believe that? I'm really interested in the Dolphins, though. That backfield, the return of Ryan Tannehill, and their receiving core, sans Jarvis Landry, and also Mike Gesicki in the NFL.
Yeah, for sure. What about you, Usaid?
So, you know, the team that I'm really excited to see in the preseason is the, you know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, because this is a team that they've added so much. You know, they overhauled the defensive line this offseason, trying to basically copy the Philadelphia Eagles and just having, like, every single player, every single defensive lineman they could get their hands on over there and create a pass rush first defense. But then you look at the other side, where I think going into 2018, it's going to be interesting to see Jameis Winston's status, because I know he's suspended for the first three games, but if he's of the regular season, but if he's playing in the preseason, you know, it's essentially a make or break year for Winston, because to me, he hasn't lived up to that number one overall, you know, expectations of, hey, you were first round, first pick, and he just hasn't played like a franchise quarterback to me. And it's going to be a tipping point for the Bucs, because if Winston plays at an MVP level, then you can say, hey, they hit on this pick even though it's 4 years down the road. If he doesn't, then a whole lot of people are going to lose their jobs. And at some point down the road, 3 or 4 years down, you could see Winston on another team, you know?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point to make. We have our friends, Phil and Mark, who do a terrific job with the full press content. I think that's what the website's called.
Yeah, full press coverage.
Full press coverage, Bucks podcast. They do a really good job over there. And they made the same point. I'm sort of excited to see the Buccaneers, but I mean, I don't know. I don't really see like the full juice behind it, you know? But I guess the team outside of the Broncos I'm excited to see play is, I really want to see the Lions, just simply, and we're going to get to them in our division preview here in a second, but I'm just really excited to see what they kind of do with the running backs, because like I said before, I think you can tell a lot about running back play and the O-line play from the preseason, and I think that's going to be telling of the Lions' success this year, but I'll kind of leave that more for our NFC North preview. Any other teams you guys are excited to watch, or are we ready to move on to the NFC North preview?
Well, you know, I think one team I'd add is the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, they got even better this offseason, number one, on the defensive line. And then number two, they're getting Carson Wentz back, who wasn't even the guy that helped them win a Super Bowl. So, you know, Eagles are going to be really cool to watch this year. were really interesting just to watch throughout the preseason.
Yeah, that's an excellent pick to watch as well. I wanted to ask Brian now if you're ready for our second division preview on this show, the NFC North. Are you ready?
I'm ready. I was born ready.
Born ready? Very nice. Very nice. Well, I suppose I should do some introducing here. Usaid, of course, a fan of the Bears. It would make sense why there's tension building because Brian Willis is a Packers fan. And we are here to talk about one of the more interesting divisions in football, I believe. So I want to start with one big, simple question because I think this could get a little bit contentious because I think there are a lot of good candidates in this division. And I'll throw it to you first, Usaid. Who has the best offense in this division?
It's the Minnesota Vikings by far. You know, I get Green Bay, they bought Aaron Rodgers. But the Vikings, they have Adam Thielen, they have Stephon Diggs, they have Kyle Rudolph at tight end. And then you also look at their running game, which is basically a two-headed monster led by Dalvin Cook and Latavius Murray.
Yeah, I mean, that's a solid answer. What about you, Brian?
No, I disagree. I think it is the Packers, and it's barely the Packers over the Vikings. The Packers have Aaron Rodgers, who's an elite quarterback, and they surround him with just any group of guys on the offensive side of the ball, and he takes them and makes them an above-average offense. I mean, you saw what it looked like without him there. Every other aspect of that team looks terrible. That's what an elite quarterback does, and you can't look at another, almost any other team, especially in this division, you can't look at another team in this division and have 100% confidence going into a game against, say, the Rams defense or Jacksonville's defense. You're bringing in Kirk Cousins to the Vikings, a quarterback who hasn't played with that team before, although he's a hell of a quarterback. I mean, he's still a new quarterback coming into a new system. I realize that they've got Adam Thielen and Diggs, Kyle Rudolph, and Dalvin Cook, which Dalvin Cook is coming off an injury, but he is still a stud running back. I give a slight edge to the Packers.
All right. Usaid, give me a rebuttal.
You know, I think Brian does make some decent points there, but the reason I give it to the Vikings is because everyone from the offense is returning, from 2017 is returning, except Kirk Cousins, who's the lone new face in the room. But, you know, you look at the level of roster turnover that the Packers offense went through, where they moved on from Jordy Nelson, they added Jimmy Graham, and then Mercedes Lewis, you know, and yes, they get Aaron Rodgers back. So when, you know, and I think now you're looking at it, and you could say the Packers offense, you don't know what to expect from them the first three, four games because people are, you know, guys, they're going to be, you know, getting used to playing in an NFL offense at a regular season speed.
All right. Here's my question for you, Brian. Who's going to be the starting running back in that offense? Because I'd argue that the Packers offense performed the best last year when they had a game-changing running back who was Aaron Jones, but he's suspended for the first four games. Two, actually. That's a lot. Not the first four.
It'll be Ty Montgomery for the first two games. And generally, how this goes in the Packers organization is he'll have the hot hand, and they'll keep him going probably till week four when he has a bad game. And then week five, it'll switch again to Aaron Jones, and then Aaron Jones will take it for five, six games. And it's just the way it works. In Green Bay, for some reason, we can never have a consistently good lead running back. It's always the guy that is considered second string that comes in and outperforms the first string for like a week or two, and then it switches again. It's just how it goes.
Okay, Usaid, let me throw this to you. Running back is a big part. Yes, Dalvin Cook is getting a lot of hype right now, but why should I buy that he'll be the same coming off a really serious knee injury?
Because last season, I know Cook played only four games, but, you know, he averaged 4.8 yards a carry and then 8.2 yards per reception, you know, and so you look at that and say, hey, listen, if Cook comes back healthy, then all of a sudden you're in a position where you've got another dual threat running back, you know, and Cook was the leading, prior to getting drafted, Cook finished his career at Florida State as like the school's all-time leading rusher, you know, and then he's obviously carried a lot of that potential over into the NFL.
But what makes you think he can come back, I guess, is my question. Because honestly, outside of really Adrian Peterson, we haven't seen a back really have a serious knee injury and then come back and have an uber successful season.
Left out?
Yeah, that is a good point, actually. That is a great point. I honestly forgot about Lev Bell.
I think you're going to see Dalvin Cook be effective because Mike Zimmer is going to use him properly. You know, they also got, I think it's Frank Reich there now as the offensive coordinator. And if they see Cook's not doing stuff right, they're going to take him out of the game, you know?
Close. Just a note for our listeners, it's John DeFilippo. Reich was scheduled to be the offensive coordinator, but he got pulled away to Indianapolis after the Josh McDaniels fiasco. So, close, but not quite. Just an update. Finish your point, Bill.
But, yeah, you know, I think Cook's going to, you know, Cook's obviously, I've heard he's been working extremely hard and that he's been performing pretty decent in training camp, you know, but even that, they're taking it slow with him. And I think that the first 2 weeks of the preseason are going to be a nice indicator of, hey, can Cook really, you know, come back and be the player he was? Because I agree with what you said earlier, is that these running backs or these players, they go down with ACL injuries and sometimes they're never the same again.
Yeah, I'm a little bit skeptical of Cook. I still buy into him in, like, some fantasy leagues, but I just don't think he's going to have the strongest start to the season. I think he'll be a factor at some point, but I'm going to go different than both of you, and I'm going to shock you a little. I'm going with the Lions. I think the Lions have the best offense in this division. And it's really because I think Matthew Stafford is one of the most underrated quarterbacks in the league. I think that this year he can be a dark horse MVP candidate. And that's because of all the tremendous wide receiving talent he has around him. You look at Kenny Golladay before he got hurt last year. He looked like an absolute stud. Then you look at proven guys like Golden Tate and Marvin Jones Jr. Like, they have a little bit of a hole at tight end. I recognize that. But Eric Ebron kept dropping passes last year, and now he's out of that offense. So you would assume it'd run better. Well, then you're going to say, oh, but Eric, they don't have a running game. Amir Abdullah is a bust. You're right. Amir Abdullah is a bust. But you know who isn't a bust? LeGarrette Blount. Everywhere he's gone, when he gets touches, he produces. He may not be a top 10 running back, but he will get you the yardage when you need the yardage. And with a running game that actually works this year, plus Kerryon Johnson from Auburn, who I absolutely loved coming out of a draft, and who I believe will have a huge part in this offense this year, plus adding Frank Ragnow, one of the best offensive linemen in the draft. He allowed only one sack at Arkansas in his entire career there. You have arguably one of the better offensive lines in the division, plus one of the better receiving cores in the NFC, plus a quarterback who I think is way above Kirk Cousins right now. And I think you combine all that together and you have potentially one of the best offenses in the league. What do you guys think about that?
You know, that's a really bold take. I mean, you could argue if Detroit puts their running game together this year, then things are, you know, you could talk about that offense as a top 10 offense. You know, I think that for for Matt Stafford, you know, he's obviously consistent. He's underrated. You know, people like to give him a lot of, like, you know, heat and whatnot because he hasn't won enough, like, elite games, or he's never won a playoff game. But, hey, I think things are finally starting to click together in Detroit. And you factor in Matt Patricia as head coach now, who's going to create, I think, a really great culture there. You could see the Lions as a sleeper team this year.
Yeah, I definitely think they're a big sleeper team in this division. Brian, what do you think about my point about the Lions' offense? Sounded like you had a point for me.
No, yeah, I definitely agree with you that it's a pretty good offense. The difference maker actually is the defense, because when Stafford makes his mistakes, it's up to the defense to get that ball back to him so he can correct that mistake and put more points on the board, because that team thrives on just outscoring their opponent. Stafford makes mistakes, and that ends up costing it. There's been so many close games for Detroit last season, and I think it's addition by subtraction with moving on from Eric Ebron. I really thought he was going to be the next big thing at tight end in the NFL. It just never came to fruition.
Yeah, absolutely. And you bring up a good point about the defense. I'd say that's a major weakness for the Lions. So, I want to go through, and not just defense, I want to specify. I want us to go around the horn really quick and pick what you think is the biggest weakness for every team in this division. Now, we're not all going to do the same team. I'll start, then Brian will take a team, Usaid will take a team, and I'll come back and I'll finish this off. And I'll stick with the Detroit Lions, and you're right, Brian. They have a bit of a weakness on defense, but the defense itself isn't awful. The pass rush is. The pass rush is basically Ezekiel Ansah, and that's about it. I love it.
He's good to go now. Ezekiel Ansah, he's practicing, good to go.
Yeah, he is. He's going to be a little bit slow to start the year. I recognize this, but when he's healthy, I think he's one of the better pass rushers in the league. Outside of him, though, you're right. They don't really have a lot of defensive pass rushing talent, or for that matter, a great run-stuffing defense. But to call the whole defense bad is a serious underestimation, I believe. I believe that Glover Quinn is one of the most underrated safeties in the league. I believe he stepped up last year. I think he's going to be an excellent part of this defense this year. And then you pair that with a top 10 cornerback like Darius Slay, and I think you have an excellent secondary. But I think this team's biggest weakness is going to be getting to the quarterback. I think it's going to be really hard for them to do that in 2018. Usaid, who's the team? What's your biggest weakness for a team in this division?
So, yeah, before I get into the whole what my biggest weakness is, I just want to add on what you said. You mentioned the pass rush in Detroit's a problem. I mean, I've got numbers here in front of me because I wrote an NFC North preview for Snack Time Fantasy. And, you know, Detroit last year, they had 35 sacks, but 18 and a half of those came from two players, Ziggy Ansah, who had 12, and then Anthony Zettel, who had 6.5 sacks. So, you know, if they can get a third player like, you know, a Sean Robinson or Gerard Davis to step up this year, both who are like second, third-year players, the pass rush in Detroit could see some major improvements. Now, going into what I think the biggest weakness for each team, or for one team is, you know, I'm going to go to the Packers and say their biggest weakness right now is their linebacking core. I know Clay Matthews is there. I know they got the kid from Vanderbilt. I think his name's like Oren Burks or something. But, you know, aside from Clay Matthews and Nick Barnett or something. I forgot the guy's name. But, you know, they don't have a lot of depth there at the linebacking position in Green Bay.
Yeah, the linebacking position in Green Bay is thin, to say the least. Clay Matthews is still marketed as a star when he's clearly not, and I'd have to agree with you. I actually really like Green Bay's defense, but the linebacking core is their one glaring weakness. Brian, who's the biggest weakness in this division?
Well, I definitely would have to agree with you, say that the biggest weakness is the Packers' defense. Although I disagree on what part, I think having a change in defensive coordinator and then bringing in two rookie corners, potential starters, is a major weakness. You're going up against guys like Golden Tate, Marvin Jones Jr., Diggs, Thielen, Allen Robinson's in your division now. These aren't guys that Jair Alexander and Josh Jackson saw last year. They saw college-level wide receivers, not veteran wide receivers. I think the corners in Green Bay are going to be the biggest weakness in this division.
All right. The corners in Green Bay. That's an interesting take as well. All right, so I guess it's on to me now, and I guess I have to run with something that obviously Usaid is going to disagree with, because we have this disagreement on our Bears preview podcast. I think the Bears offensive line is the biggest weakness in this division. I understand. I understand that they drafted talent, and I understand that people are getting healthy. But even when that line was healthy last year, they really struggled in pass protection. And I just feel like Mitchell Trubisky needs as much of that as possible right now. And I don't think they're a bad offensive line, but I don't think they're as great as some people make them out to be. And the Bears, in general, I can't find a ton of reasons for weakness. I like Mitchell Trubisky. I love the wide receiving core. Anthony Miller sounds like he's going to be the number one wide receiver. I'm convinced of that at this point. Like, everything that's come out of Bears camp has convinced me that Anthony Miller is going to be the number one guy there. I love Jordan Howard, but I don't know. I just can't buy into this offensive line. They just looked so bad last year.
I mean, they were mediocre to say, you know. Obviously, yeah, you're right. They weren't like the Dallas Cowboys, but they weren't offensive line in the league anyway. Their biggest problem last year was just staying healthy, you know. Their linemen, the guards, Josh Sitton, who's not there anymore, and then Kyle Long, who's still there, you know, he's the oldest player on the Bears. They both struggled to stay healthy. Leno is an above-average tackle. Massey, yeah, he's somewhat inconsistent. You know, he was effective at times. And then you look at the center position of Cody White here, who really had a great 2016 season, but then 2017 just struggled with penalties. And then going forward for 2018, you know, it's going to be real cool to see the Bears offensive line, because they got Harry Einstein now, who was the former offensive line coach at Notre Dame. And if you know the level, if you know some of the names that Einstein sent to the NFL over the last 3 to 4 years, guys like Mike McGlinchey, Quentin Nelson, Zach Martin, you know, all offensive linemen who were top 10 picks, there's a lot of reason I think that you're going to see improvement from the Bears offensive line this year.
Yeah.
And then you also factor in, they added the versatile offensive lineman, 20-year-old center/guard James Daniels from Iowa, who honestly was labeled as some as one of the most athletic offensive linemen in the country.
I mean, you make a tough sell for them, but I've got to see it to buy into it. I feel like you're right. There's definitely a lot of upside with this Bears line, but still, like, I just watched too much of them on Game Pass last year because I really liked the way Mitchell Trubisky played to just buy into the offensive line. And maybe that will change. Of course it will change with the scheme and things like that, but I don't know, man. I just feel like that's my feeling for biggest weakness in the division. Which brings us to our next question, unless, Brian, you have something to add on.
Yeah, just real quick, as a Packers fan, I'm saying this as a Packers fan, I feel more comfortable with the Bears O-line than the Packers O-line going forward at this point. The Bears added, they did some really subtle upgrading to that O-line that just, I don't want to say to the untrained eye, but it was just so subtle. But when you look at it, like Usaid spelled it out for you, they really did upgrade it. Whereas the Packers, I mean, it's at this point with Packers O-line, it's like a cross your fingers type thing, and that's a shame. I feel bad for Aaron Rodgers that he's got to play behind that line.
Yeah, didn't Bakhtiari just pick up a knock in training camp this week?
Yeah, sprained ankle.
Ooh, yeah, that's not good. That line.
Yeah, you know, I wanted. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Aaron.
No, go for it.
Yeah, I was gonna add on to what Brian said. You gotta feel bad for a guy like Aaron Rodgers because the thing is, I mean, his two main guys on the offensive line are, Brian Bulaga and David Bakhtiari. You know, other than that, I know no one. I mean, they had Byron Bell, who also the veteran, who's also gotten dinged up. You know, but Bell sold. I don't expect like anything really special of him.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that offers another good transition to our next topic here, which is who doesn't have to be a person, could be a position group, could be a coach, a GM, a player, who has the hottest seat in the NFC North right now, and I'll start with you, Brian, because I think I know who you're going with.
I think it's by far Mike McCarthy. Well, for starters, how do you justify they got rid of the GM, Ted Thompson. Between Ted Thompson and Mike McCarthy, how do you justify getting one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time one Super Bowl in his career this far? That's insulting. And not only that, they got rid of everyone around Mike McCarthy, but kept him. They got rid of the defensive coordinator, they got rid of the general manager and kept the head coach. That rarely, rarely happens. And when it does, the head coach, more often than not, loses his job the following season because, again, the expectations weren't met. Now, with an elite quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, he's made these guys look phenomenal, way better than what they are. And it would be hard-pressed for Aaron Rodgers to make them look bad enough, make McCarthy look bad enough this following season that he would lose his job. I think McCarthy's been with the team now 12 years, and that's an extremely long time for a head coach these days. It's most teams, most organizations are, what have you done for me lately? And without making deep playoff runs, McCarthy as a head coach is underachieving. Year in and year out, he's underachieving. I think he's definitely on the hot seat.
I mean, yeah, I think that for my hot seat, honestly, I would never have put him on the hot seat until I met you, Brian, because, I mean, you do make a good point. Like, it is ridiculous that he has never before had a winning team, like a Super Bowl team. And it's just, I don't know, it's hard for me to reconcile with that a little bit as a guy who really liked Mike McCarthy for a long time. But you're right, he only has one Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers, and he should have at least two or three. Usaid, who is your hot seat in this division?
So, you know, I'm going to agree with a lot of what Brian said. I mean, as soon as I saw the question, you know, I was like, yeah, the guy on the hot seat to me is head coach Mike McCarthy. You know, you look at after Rodgers went down last year, you look at the way McCarthy handled everything in the sense that he really didn't seem to trust Brett Hundley, you know, until Aaron Rodgers got involved a bit and was like, no, let him sling the ball downfield some, you know. And then you look at the fact that, and then Hundley did flash potential. And then you also have to look at the fact that, you know, Brian Gutekunst, I believe that's how you say his last name, he's the new GM in Green Bay now. You know, Ted Thompson, with his conservative style, is gone. Gutekunst is clearly willing to be more aggressive, and he showed that this offseason with the way he approached free agency, you know, being aggressive signing Graham, also in the draft, trading back in the first round, but then trading up. And so you look ahead to 2018. Now, this could be McCarthy's last season as a Packer, because in the NFL, it's the type of league where whoever's running the show in the front office, they want guys they want their types of guys on the sidelines, guys that share the same philosophy. McCarthy was a conservative Ted Thompson type guy. Gutekunst, he could go with a, you know, an innovate. If Gutekunst decides, hey, I'm going to make a head coaching change, he could very well decide to go with a younger offensive-minded guy, because Gutekunst has showed that, hey, I have the aggressive nature, and he could want someone running his team like that. You know, someone that's going to listen to what Aaron Rodgers has to say, because I watched a lot of Packers games in the past, not just when they play against the Bears, but really, it always seems like Aaron Rodgers is telling Mike McCarthy, like, what to do. Like, he steps up to the line of scrimmage and literally changes the play, you know?
I mean, yeah, those are exactly right. Those are all good points. I'd agree, but for the sake of it, I'm going to go really bold here. I'm going to say that, and it's a big could, Mike Zimmer could be on the hot seat, because he has put himself in a position where, if you listen to his comments at the combine, he said, if we don't win this division, and if I don't get to the Super Bowl, I should lose my job. And, I mean, yes, you could say every coach says that, every coach thinks that, but the Vikings and the NFC North in general, the schedule is tough. They play the NFC West, so they're going to have to go up against the Rams. I get that the Seahawks aren't what they used to be, but they're going to have to eventually. I believe that the Vikings have to go into Seattle. They have to go to Foxborough. They have to play in a tight 14. And then, it's a brutal stretch, though, from weeks 11 to 14. They play the Bears at Soldier Field, the Packers at home, the Patriots at Gillette, and the Seahawks at CenturyLink. That's a brutal four-week stretch where I could see the Vikings losing those four games. And then you pair that with... I could see it. Anything can happen in the NFL, and I could see them going 1-3 even. But then you also pair that with the fact they have to play the Rams and the Eagles. The Vikings legitimately have to play every top team in the NFC minus the Falcons. Like, it's ridiculous how hard their schedule is. And if Kirk Cousins, like, as much as you guys were hyping him up, like, and as much as I wanted him as a Broncos fan, I was a little bit blinded. If you look at the stats and if you look at the game film, like, he has some bad games, and he makes some questionable throws sometimes, and he might not be a top 10 quarterback. And, I mean, I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot riding on this Vikings season, because I feel like the expectations in Minnesota are Super Bowl, and I feel like they might not quite be ready to get there yet.
You know, I'm obviously going to agree with you on that. Is the comments Zimmer made at the combine, you know, NFL head coaches sometimes, they just have this thing of, they'll just say certain things, you know, because they don't really want to deal with the media and whatnot. He's holding himself accountable there, yes. But at the end of the day, he realizes that that's reality. And when you look at it, now you realize, yeah, they got a star-studded defense. They just locked up Stephon Diggs last week to an extension. They got guys like Everson Griffin, Anthony Barr, you know, Trey Wayne, Xavier Rhodes. And when you look at the defense now, you realize that, yeah, it is Super Bowl or bust, and if it's all going to be on Kirk Cousins, because he could literally be boom or bust for them.
Yeah, I mean...
He will be held to that comment.
Like, I don't know. I feel like, obviously, it's if they go.
I was gonna say, what do you guys think? What would they have to do? How would they have to perform for Zimmer to lose his job?
Like,
I think it would be very difficult for Zimmer to lose his job.
Obviously, if they make the playoffs, he's safe. But
sure.
There's a very real chance in the stacked NFC if they go 10-6. They miss the playoffs. So I feel like anything less than 10 wins and his job's in jeopardy, to be honest with you.
Not even, forget the whole thing of 10 wins. He could win 10 games, but then miss the playoffs and not even win the division, you know? And I think for him to keep his job, he's going to have to win the division and win 10-plus games and also make a deep playoff run, because I don't think Vikings ownership will be afraid of making, like, that, you know, a late change in January or whatever, you know, if they get ousted from the playoffs. Because it legitimately, they poured a lot of money into Kirk Cousins. I think it was something like 3 years, $91 million. And you know what? That's basically right there of, hey, you guys better get to the Super Bowl or else, you know, everyone in the building could lose their jobs.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's...
I think you guys are crazy.
I don't think so, dude. Like, I think the pressure in...
Sorry, go ahead.
The pressure in Minnesota is insane, bro.
He was a play away from going to the Super Bowl, and you think the following season, if he underperforms, he's gone?
Yeah, I mean...
You would get rid of a coach that was a play away from the Super Bowl.
I wouldn't, but I think an NFL owner would.
Oh, man, that'd be so hard to justify if they went, like, 9-7 and missed the playoffs.
I think if he went 9-7, there's a very real chance he loses his job.
Look, if they go 9-7, you know, but what happens is some guys are, like, injured or something, you know, then you give Zimmer another year. But if everyone's healthy and they basically lay an egg, you know, then you sort of have to say, oh, hey, what's going on here, Mike? Is, you know, like, are you really the guy that can lead this team to the promised land? Or are you just merely one of those coaches that gets to the playoffs, messes around with getting to the Super Bowl, but then never really has what it takes to get over the hump? And the Vikings, they have everything on their roster right now to get them to the Super Bowl and for them to win it.
You know what's kind of funny is we talk about Zimmer like this, but then there's coaches like Marvin Lewis and Hugh Jackson out there.
Well, I'm going to have to stop you right there, you know, regarding Marvin Lewis, because Marvin Lewis, he is really tight with the Bengals ownership, and they were so bad before he got there. Mike Brown's going to, the owner, Cincinnati's not a big market. Mike Brown's going to keep him because they're like best friends forever. You know, Hugh Jackson, I don't know how he was granted a third year, especially after they hired John Dorsey.
Well, Verba Browns.
I understand the whole narrative with Marvin Lewis and the Bengals brass there. It just kills me. A guy like Zimmer, if he were to get fired, Zimmer looks over at the Bengals organization and just goes, "What do I have to do?" You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, NFL's a tough biz, man. All right,
funny bit.
Let's get on to. I think that was kind of a hot take. Brian, I do want to cover the Aaron Rodgers situation. I do want to cover it kind of quickly, though. So, starting now, this is Brian Willis's Aaron Rodgers Corner. You have 2 minutes. Starting now. How is this situation going to play out?
Yeah, the Packers and Aaron Rodgers clearly aren't on the same page with the extension. When Rodgers' contract is up, it's he signed through 2019, he'll be 36 years old. It's completely within the realm of possibility that the Packers draw this out, don't give him any contract extension, franchise him for 2 years. By then he'll be 38, and then they move on. Money-wise, it's the most sound way to play it. As a fan, I would hate it. I would feel horrible for Rodgers, but I realistically, Gutekunst, the new GM, is a money guy, and that would be the best way to save the most money with an aging quarterback. Although he is elite, by the time he's 39, do you want to be paying him a fully guaranteed contract, which is likely what he's asking for.
Yeah, I mean, that was Brian Willis's Aaron Rodgers Corner. All right, let's move on to this next thing, and I'm doing this with every one of these. I want to go around the table, and I will say this. If it's about their standings, don't put it out there, because that's coming at the end of the show. But we're going to go around, and each of us, for every team, is going to give a hot take. I will start, and let's start with the Detroit Lions. And my hot take is Matthew Stafford will win MVP.
Oh, my God.
Is that really that crazy, though?
I mean, not, you know, I'm going to have to back you up on that. I think, yes, Stafford can win MVP, because there's not, like, a whole lot of, like, there's only three, like, quarterbacks, in my opinion, Brady, Brees, and Rodgers. After that, you know, it's sort of, like, 50-50. But, yeah, dude, I could see Matt Stafford finally having an MVP season.
It would have to play out much the way that Tom Brady's season played out this past year, where the closest competition got injured.
I don't know, man. I really think that Matthew Stafford can do it this year, which brings me to one of our favorite segments here, which is quarterback stat over-under, because I'm excellent at setting these. I love doing these. These are some of my favorites. So let's just play a little bit. We have Usaid in one corner, Brian in the other. Let's start with yardage. Matthew Stafford, 4,600.5 yardage, over under. Usaid, I'll start with you.
I think he goes under it this year, but not by a significant amount. And the reason I'm going to go with under is this, is because you've got LeGarrette Blount now, and you have Kerryon Johnson, you know, two guys who I finally think the Lions have figured their running game out. So you're not going to have Stafford throw the ball like every single play.
Brian, what do you think?
I hate the number that you picked again. And I hate that I'm going to have to agree with Usaid, because that's not really good content, but I believe he just barely squeaks under that. Another year of Kenny Galladay is going to help that number, but, I mean, you look at the defenses in the division, the Packers got better.
Did they, though? Let's focus on that for a second. Did the Packers actually get better on defense, on offense, Brian? Because
I was talking defense.
Oh, all right.
They drafted primarily defense. They took two corners in the first round.
Oh, sorry. I thought you said offense.
On paper, no, that's fine. On paper, they got better. So, I mean, if you're looking to see, where did you get that number from? What he did last season?
No, I just kind of averaged his numbers for his career. Let's move on to touchdowns. Let's go 32.5. I'll start with you, Brian.
I'll take the over. I think it is 33.
All right. Usaid?
I'm going to go with over and say he has 35 or 36.
All right. Very good. All right. Well, that was Matthew Stafford over under. Brian, your hot take on the Lions.
My hot take on the Lions will be that Kenny Galladay will finish as their top wide receiver.
That is a hot take. I like it, though. I could get behind that. What about you, Usaid?
My hot take for the Lions involves Kerryon Johnson, because he was electric at Auburn. I'm going to go ahead and say Kerryon Johnson takes the NFL by storm.
I'm about that, too. I'm really, like, the more I've thought about all these teams after I wrote these previews in mid-July and got kind of burnt out by them, the more I figure out that I love the Lions this year. Like, I feel like they're a really big sleeper team in the NFC, especially on offense. So I like these Lions hot takes. Let's keep it going with you, though, Usaid. Who's the next team we should talk about here, and give me your hot take about them?
So I'm going to go hot take with the Green Bay Packers. And I'm going to say, I did mention this briefly earlier in the show, but my hot take for the Packers is that the offense will struggle through the first five games because there's so many new bodies there. You know, they moved, like I said, they moved on from Jordy Nelson, and that was a really questionable move to me. Like, yeah, I get Nelson was getting older, as every NFL player does as their career goes on. But at the same time, the thing with Nelson and Rodgers was this, is they had this unparalleled chemistry where it was like they were inside each other's head and they knew like exactly what the other one was thinking at any given moment.
Yeah, I mean, that's a decent hot take. What about you, Brian?
Well, I have a counterpoint to that take, but yeah. I meant to give it earlier. Look at the Packers wide receivers through the years with Aaron Rodgers. They went from Donald Driver to Greg Jennings to Jordy Nelson to Devontae Adams. Those guys were nothing, and Aaron Rodgers made them something. And everywhere else that they went on to, they turned back into nothing. I think a lot of the Packers wide receivers are the way they are because of Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, honestly, but you have to keep in mind is that Rodgers is so good that, like you said, he elevates those around him, you know, but I just don't see, like, the thing, like, the first off, they're uncertain, you mentioned, they're uncertain about who they're going to start at running back come week four of the season, because one guy's going to have a bad, because Ty Montgomery's going to have a bad game, and then you also look at, you know, Devontae Adams, obviously the number one guy there, he had, I think, 12 touchdowns in 2016, he was still effective with Brett Hundley last year, but he sort of annoyed me, because I had him on fantasy, all right, but then
that
you
was
also
weird.
Look at
Randall Cobb,
right? His thing is this, is his targets have been declining. And then you have a whole bunch of unknowns on the thing. Like, yeah, you got Geronimo Allison there, who's somewhat impressed in camp from what I've heard. But then you have, I think they drafted like three rookie wide receivers, you know, and that's a red flag to me is that, hey, there's all these new bodies on the offense there, and you don't know how they're going to pan out.
I think that I side with Usaid a little bit on this, but not much, because I do agree. I think we're going to start slow, because the Packers always start slow, Brian. Like, it's the whole Aaron Rodgers relax thing. Like, no matter what, like, until the week 3 or 4 Cowboys game last year, that offense wasn't any good for the first 2 weeks. And I think that I could definitely see that again. I don't think it's going to be 5 weeks, because the Packers run into the Bills in week 4 and the Redskins in week 3, and both those defenses are average. But I could definitely see in the first 2 weeks with the Bears and the Vikings defense, the Packers offense struggling a little bit to start up early.
You know, you mentioned the Bills defense, and I'm going to add this on, you know, the Bills, they got Sean McDermott now, the same guy who helped get the was the architect of the Panthers getting to Super Bowl 50, insane. You know, and I think that there's plenty of...
Don't be one of these guys. Don't be the guy that... Don't be the Bills are going to be okay guy. Please don't
listen,
be that
I'm not,
guy.
I'm not going to be the Bills are going to be okay guy. I know the Bills are going to have a bad year because they're quarterback, but their defense, they really competed last year. Now you got guys like Tremaine Edmonds, Tre'Davious White, Micah Hyde there, you know. I think Then you also look at Shaq Lawson, who shows some potential. The Bills' defense, they're going to be better than people give them credit for.
The Bills, Brian will know this reference because he's been with us a little bit longer, but I feel like the Bills this year are turning into what the Dolphins were to me last year. Just a major annoyance in my life that everyone else keeps defending, but I just... ardently stand against. I will not stand for the Bills being good this year, but it's whatever. Brian, what's your hot take about the Packers?
Ooh, it's kind of a double whammy here. The Packers are going to cut Randall Cobb.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. I mean, they talked about it in the offseason.
That'll save them $10 million against the cap. And a new GM is going to want to play with money. And that's a big chunk of change, especially for an aging wide receiver and also declining wide receiver statistically. And they drafted 3 wide receivers this year. So I think it's definitely in the realm of possibility.
Yeah, definitely could happen. I think my hot take is going to be this. Jamal Williams wins the starting job, and he doesn't give it back until week 10. I think that Jamal Williams is going to be a real factor in that backfield this year. I noticed that when we talked about him earlier, you didn't really bring him up, Brian, but I feel like he's just going to be the number one guy this year. He performed okay last year, I think, and I think he's going to perform well again this year, and I really do believe that he will be the Packers' lead back for a long period of the season.
Were you just all in on Aaron Jones earlier?
I am all in on Aaron Jones, but you're right. Like, the Packers ride with the hot hand, and if Jamal Williams has the hot hand through the first 4 weeks of the season, which I think he will, I think they'll stick with him for a while. I love Aaron Jones. He's, like, one of my favorite young running backs to watch in the league. I think he's extremely talented. But at the same time, you're absolutely right. The Packers don't do the smart thing at running back. I don't think they're going to do the smart thing at running back and play Aaron Jones when he's unsuspended. I think Jamal Williams is going to impress in the preseason. I think he's going to have about 3 to 4 good weeks to start the season. And then I think they're going to ride with him for the next 6 to 7 weeks. And then eventually, when it gets to crunch time, go to Aaron Jones.
Anything's possible in that backfield. Even if you're looking from like a fantasy football standpoint, I'm not touching any of them.
Yeah, probably a good idea not to. Brian, why don't you give me the hot take on the Minnesota Vikings?
Sure. I think that Vikings quarterback Kirk Cousins will have the worst season of his career, get injured, and the Vikings trade for and start RG3.
Whoa! All right. That's absolutely wild. Usay, do you even have a response for that?
That's I think really going, you know, that was just so out of left field. I mean, I don't think Kirk Cousins is gonna get like injured or whatever.
That's applause. It was a very hot take. Hot take by Brian. Brian understood the segment.
Hey, you guys wanted a hot one. I gave you a hot one.
Hey, in all seriousness, you know, if Cousins does go, you know, I'm not entirely sold on the Kirk Cousins bandwagon either. But, yeah, I do get what Brian's saying is, hey, if something happens to him, the quarterback situation in Minnesota's up in air, basically. And they're going to have to trade for someone. Because I know no one on their roster right now that's, like, good enough to step in and be the backup.
You know a guy who's being talked about being traded and what would be absolutely one of the wildest stories in the NFL of all time. You guys don't know who I'm thinking about? Teddy Bridgewater. What if Kirk Cousins got hurt? They know Bridgewater in the building. They liked him. They let him walk because they knew they could get Cousins. But what if Cousins does get hurt? Maybe the Jets, who are touting Bridgewater around as this great guy, if Bridgewater performs well in the preseason, I think the Jets are looking to trade him like ASAP. Because I don't think they want Darnold. Like, they could absolutely... That would be one of the wildest storylines in NFL history.
You're right. I thought I went pretty wild with my take. RG3 replacing Kirk Cousins. You know, the reverse of what happened in Washington, but you just completely blew that out of the water with Teddy Bridgewater coming back to Minnesota. That's great.
But I feel like it's more likely, though, because wouldn't you rather take Teddy Bridgewater over RG3 if you were any franchise in the league? And I feel like the Vikings are extremely smart as far as personnel goes.
Oh, yeah, it's 100% more possible than what I said.
What about you, Usaid?
All right, hot take for the Vikings. I'm going to go ahead and say that the Vikings secondary leads the NFL in interceptions.
Oh, Usay, boo. That's the least hot take I've ever heard. The Vikings have the best defense in the NFL.
That's a warm take.
That's a cold take. It's not even a lukewarm take.
It's like what Brian said. It's a warm take, the reason me. I really like the Vikings secondary, okay? I mean, they added basically...
Everyone does, though.
No, not everyone gives them the credit they deserve, though. That's the thing, you know? It's a deep secondary, and I really think that they're going to be a big factor for the defense this year. Because you know how earlier in the show you were telling us about, oh, the Vikings schedule is so tough? You remember that, Eric?
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, and I think that the secondary, it's going to be the tipping point this year. The reason is because they... you know, they got to go up against guys like Allen Robinson and, you know, Brandon Cooks. I'm not going to name all the guys they got to go up against, and Alshon Jeffrey, obviously, you know. And I don't care how the front seven's going to perform, because I know they're going to do fine. But the secondary is really going to be the typical, and I seriously think they're going to have the most interceptions this year, because it's another year of continuity. There's so much continuity on Mike Zimmer's defense. Sometimes I look at the roster, and I literally have to, like, Google players' names to be like, yo, how long has this guy been there? Only to find out that he's been there for, like, 3 years and he's, like, 25 years old or something.
Yeah, I mean, they draft extremely well on defense.
I don't know about you guys, but there's two things that I absolutely put zero stock into. Strength of schedule before the season starts, when all that garbage comes out about least easiest schedule and hardest schedule. Strength of schedule and how players are doing in camp. I put zero stock in how well players are doing in camp.
But that's the only way I can be optimistic as a Broncos fan.
Everyone's going to pass for 5,000 yards because of how they look. Joe Flacco's... Jeez, he's going to pass for 5,000 yards this year, guys. He's having the best camp ever. Last year, it was all the Dolphins players. Parker was going to receive 1,000 yards. Landry, 1,000 yards. Jay Ajayi was going to have 1,000 yards rushing for the Dolphins last year, just coming out of camp. It's like, I put zero stock in that stuff.
Yeah, I guess you're right, which is why you're going to hate my hot take for the Bears. My hot take for the Bears is that Anthony Miller wins Offensive Rookie of the Year. I truly 100% believe that. I have 100% bought into the Anthony Miller hype. I watched his college tape. I've watched him in training camp. And I know it's gonna backfire. But I think that Anthony Miller will win Rookie of the Year. That's my hot take for the Bears.
Hey, listen, man. As for someone who lives literally an hour and 15 minutes away from Bears training camp, and I haven't had the chance to drive down there this year, unfortunately, but listen, Anthony Miller, I seriously think he's the real deal. Some people are labeling him the next Antonio Brown. That's going way too far because college and the NFL, obviously two different games, but, you know, the folks over at Windy City Gridiron at the Bears Bros, you know, who obviously have great content, and then my website, FanSided, you know, we've really been active covering Bears training camp. And if there's one thing we can all agree on, it's that everyone's on the Allen Robinson hype train. Everyone's all focused on Kevin White, you know, and hopefully he'll be healthy this year. But what we're all agreeing on is Anthony Miller might be the best wide receiver in Chicago by the end of the 2018 season. And it's likely it's going to happen. I mean, he was making catches yesterday because I was watching live stream, and literally it looked like...
I saw that.
That's the next coming of, like, Alshon Jeffrey or something, you know?
Yeah. Brian, you're not going to buy into that. What's your Bears hot take?
My Bears hot take, boy, I would say it's warm. I think the best running back in that backfield coming out of the season will be Tariq Cohen.
Really? I feel like that's a hot take.
I think he edges out Jordan Howard by the end of the season. Do you think that's a hot take?
I'm going to stop you there, Ryan. I'm going to have to say I think it's a warm take, really, because, like, Cohen, he's the kid's the next coming of Tyreek Hill, basically, you know? He's been playing every position in Matt Nagy's offense in training camp, lining up inside, really? In the slot, you know, been all over the place. And he's going to have a breakout year, you know, for those that are listening to this.
You guys think that he's going to be better than Jordan Howard?
But, yeah, you know,
that's wild.
You know, I like confidence. Absolutely wild. But, you know.
That's wild. I think that's wild. That's absolutely wild. I think Jordan Howard is obviously the better player, and I think he's obviously going to have a great year if you're hyping up this offensive line to be what they will be. And I mean, I think that there is no shot that Tariq Cohen comes out seen as a better player than Jordan Howard. I think that's an absolutely ludicrous take, but I love it. Again, applause for Brian because he understood the segment, and it was a great hot take. Good job, Brian. Shout out to you. Let's go around now and predict the division.
Hold on, man. I didn't get to have my
pick. Oh, you're a Bears fan. Of course. Yeah. How could I forget?
All right, ready, Viz?
Yeah.
Pretty hot take here. Jordan Howard will lead the NFL in receiving yards for running backs. That's my Bears hot take for you guys. And why? Jordan, I got a report today, you guys, from someone that's at Bears training camp that said Howard has been, before and after practice, he's been catching about 200 to 300 passes each day.
Yeah, that came across my sleeper bot today. That's wild that he's doing that. But I think he knows he's in a tight competition with a running back that can catch the ball in Cohen.
I mean, yeah, I have to agree. I just barely hyped up Jordan Howard, so I got to kind of stand by that. All right, so let me just start with predictions. I think the best way to do this is to kind of go around and just one by one list off the order we have the division going in. I'll start with you, Brian.
We'll go Vikings 11-5, winning the division. Packers 10-6. Lions 8-8, and Bears 7-9.
All right. All right. We are going to have some very different standings. Let's all just get them out on the table, and then we can talk about them. So, Usaid, what about you?
I'm going to go Vikings 10-6. Packers 10-6. So those guys are going to be tied for the division, but I'm going to give the division crown to Green Bay, all right, because of Aaron Rodgers, because when it's crunch time, the guy always does something. Then I'm going to go Bears at 8-8, and then Lions at 7-9.
Well, by far, I have the hottest takes when it comes to standings, because...
You don't say.
My hot take here is that this division is tied with the NFC South for being the best division in football right now. I don't think there's a real question about it. I think that, and this is going to shock you guys. You guys went with the safe picks, but I've learned that over time, like, they show like 5 or 6 teams every year don't make the playoffs. I think this year is going to be a total shakeup. The Lions are going to win the division. They're going to go 11-5. The Bears are going to tie with them at 11-5, and pick up the second wild card spot.
What?
The Vikings are going 10-6, and the Packers are going to go 10-6, but both will miss the playoffs. It's actually not impossible, because I'm running this through a playoff predictors thing right now.
You're nuts.
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. Are you kidding me? Like, I think that... You kidding me? I just think that, I mean, they play the NFC West, which is, the Vikings schedule is the only one out of this division that is uber hard. Like, they play the NFC West, which is basically just the Rams, and maybe the Seahawks if you have to play them at home. And then you play the AFC East, which outside of the Patriots is basically 3 wins. Like, I don't know why you guys, like, is this really that wild, you say, but I think this division's going to be this good? I feel like it's the best division in football.
You know, I think it's the best all-around division in football, because every single team at some positional group has something to offer. And when you look at, you know, I think when you really look at the North, you know, you're right. It is a really tough division, because anything can happen at any moment. For so long, we've seen, and I think Brian's going to disagree with me on this, for so long, we've seen the Packers basically dominate the division. But the last few years, you've seen, you know, the Lions, they've sort of sniffed at that. The Vikings have certainly sniffed at that. And then you look at the level of talent that the Bears have added. And it's not hard to see. this division being a complete surprise in 2018. A lot of typical NFL fans are going to talk to me like, oh, we got Aaron Rodgers there. He's going to come back stronger than ever. It's like, yeah, he is. But you know what? I'll tell you something right now based on the Packers 2016 season. Rodgers cannot do everything for this team, and someone else is going to have to step up. So there's definitely potential that you see a new team at the top of the NFC North this year. So no, Eric, it's not a completely like wild take.
And Brian, I shout out to you because Mike McCarthy is going to get fired.
I hope so.
I know it. They're going to miss the playoffs this year. It's going to be a wake-up call, and McCarthy is going to get fired.
Is it possible that they could make the playoffs and he gets fired?
No, that will never happen. I think he's got to miss the playoffs for it to really fall apart for him. And I think he will. But, hey, you'll get 10 wins. That's still really good.
Yeah.
Look at the bright side, Brian, for you guys up in Green Bay. As much as you hate Mike McCarthy, keep in mind you got 2 first-round picks next year.
Yeah, damn. Bro.
Draft. And for someone who's just slowly started to dig into the draft, 2019 is supposed to be the year of wide receivers, linebackers, and defensive linemen. So, you know.
Well, McCarthy didn't get us those picks. Brian Gutekunst got those picks.
No, but, you know, I'm just saying, man. Gutekunst will be gone. I'm sorry, McCarthy will be gone, and Gutekunst will have his guys. So, you know, going to be interesting.
I thought that trade that he made during the draft was brilliant, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, he robbed the Saints. He robbed the Saints. Like, I don't know. That is honestly one of the worst draft moves I've ever seen by a team, ever. To move up for a guy who would have been there. Like, I don't know, man. Congrats on that. All right, guys. Before we head out here, any final thoughts on this division? I'll start with you, Brian.
I sincerely disagree with your views on it, but I think it's entirely possible that both the Vikings and the Packers start off 0-3, and the Lions and Bears start off 3-0, and it's a competitive all the way through. But I just can't see the Lions and Bears taking the top 2 spots. Vikings will start just because of bringing in a new quarterback, Kirk Cousins.
All right, Usaid.
Final thoughts, and I think I'm going to leave our listeners with a really hot take. This is going to be an awesome offensive division, especially to watch from the offensive perspective. And hey, maybe, just maybe, you see all four offenses as explosive they're going to be in the top half of the league. Meaning, you could have, the North could really be the best offensive division in the NFL in 2018.
Yeah. And host the league's best defense. So,
oh, yeah.
Like, I don't know, man. I'm telling you, Brian. You kidding me, bro? You just gotta be, you have a little faith. But anyways, thank you guys so much for coming on. You're hearing this Wednesday, so we will be back Saturday with, the NFC West preview. That should be a lot of fun. We're having Jonders on, plus a bunch of other NFL writers from the NFC West. So that should be a ton of fun.
I'd like to give a quick shout out, if you don't mind, to John Butler. Earlier on Twitter, he shared a picture of a list of all the teams that have the most enshrinees in the NFL, and the teams that have the most, the Bears actually lead that list with 28 enshrinees. Unfortunately, they only have 1 Super Bowl. So, yeah. Shout out to John Butler.
Oh, not so much for me. But okay, John. Whatever, bro. Come at me. Follow me on Twitter at Eric18Utah, at EndZonePod. Brian, you're at Real Brian Willis. You write for Pro Sports Fandom, sort of. You're more just known for your volleyball skills, so I'm not going to let you plug anything because, let's be honest, there's nothing to plug unless the podcast is coming. Is it coming?
We're shooting for next summer. Go Oaks.
Go Oaks. All right. But my friend Usaid, always a man with a lot in the burner, What you got, man? Plug yourself really quick. Where can people find you?
So, yeah, you guys can find me at UCultural Sports on Twitter. You know, like I said, I've said in previous episodes, guys, my DMs are always open, so you can DM me if you want me to, like, you know, make a podcast appearance or just, you know, maybe even write a cool article for you or something, you know? And, that's all I've got to say, guys.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening, and we will see you on Saturday. Peace out. Follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. If you have any suggestions, questions, or you just want a shout out on the pod, send an email to endzonepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.